Compatible with a TV what? Well, not to manufacture yet. Just a couple of weeks ago, I brought home our first personal computer. It was built out of a SCAMP and Nibble, and we did some video interface circuitry so you could run it into a modulator and then into a television set. And it's pretty crude right now. It just puts out alphanumerics. But we've got a guy in the back room that we don't let him out very often, but he's a real raving maniac. And he's talking about how we can do color graphics using the game chips that National's bringing out. I would expect toward the end of the year, using the video game chips that are back in the lab now, we're going to be able to produce some pretty sexy home computer systems. I don't know if we'll manufacture them, but the chips will sure be available. You'll have the capability to define multiples of four objects in foreground, any shape, any color, any motion you want. They can pass in front and back of each other. The computer can detect impacts, make noises that go with them over three octaves. The background can be defined in blocks of 8 bits all around the screen and can move relative to each other or all at once in different colors. And it's going to be wild, believe me, the stuff that comes out. It's not quite there yet. Any others? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. The only thing I want to take exception with is Charlie Sprock's rising to the throne. Like Al Einstein said, it's all relative, right? Okay. Next, we have Glenn Ewing from IMSI. Glenn is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy in 1967, Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey in 74, served as an officer in the U.S. Navy for 10 years with tours of duty, flying various naval aircraft, and is a member of the faculty of the Naval Postgrad School. Joined IMSI when discharged from the service earlier this year. Glenn?
Thank you, Lloyd. Can I have a lights, please? Oh, yes.
Can you have a light again? There we go. Never mind.
Find them. Okay. As microprocessor applications have become more sophisticated, users have discovered that the amount of memory available for their particular applications is perhaps inadequate in terms of the available hardware. IMSI set out to develop a series of high-performance memory boards for the S-100 bus, and when it became apparent that we also needed to address the problem of addressing a memory system of larger than 65K, it was decided to develop a megabyte memory system for the S-100 bus. Right. This memory system, can I have the next slide please, was to consist of three different RAM boards, or random access memory boards, of capacity 16,000 bytes, 32,000 bytes, and 65,000 bytes each, plus a memory control board, or our IMM, or Intelligent Memory Manager board, which implements the necessary electronics for expanding the memory beyond 65,000 bytes, and in addition, gives us certain memory control features which facilitate this expansion over and above just simply generating the required additional address lines. Okay, next slide, please. Okay. The memory boards themselves there's nothing particularly unusual about them within the context of they are dynamic boards using the very latest, the latest available dynamic memory chips, these specifically using the Intel products. We rate them at 400 nanoseconds access. It's super conservative. The devices themselves are all better than 300 nanoseconds. It has the seemingly much sought-after feature of having hidden refresh. Now, I'm sure you've seen these in ads for our boards and for other boards. All that is meant by hidden refresh is that, take for example the 8080 processor, there are certain times during an instruction cycle when the system CPU is not accessing memory. And one guaranteed such time is during the instruction fetch cycle. You have at least one state, specifically T4 for the 8080, in which the CPU is not accessing the memory, and by ensuring that that's the exact time that you make all your refreshes, there's no conflict between keeping your memory refreshed and the throughput to the CPU. Okay. So to implement hidden refresh while the CPU is running, we just slide our refresh cycles into the T4 part of each instruction fetch cycle. This does have some complicating side effects, because if you have a front panel on your machine and you hit stop, you no longer have these instruction fetch cycles flying by that you can use for refresh. And also, when you're DMAing, you don't have instruction refresh cycles, so you have to also worry about these kinds of things happening. And in those situations, the MSI boards use just a first-come, first-serve processing for memory references and instruction refreshes. And if a memory reference is attempted, either from a front panel operation or from a DMA operation, the memory just goes not ready. Okay. It was highly desirable, since it was the memory boards are, in fact, the primary product in the sense that they're going to represent the vast bulk of the sales, that the memory boards have capability of standing alone without any additional electronics. So the memory boards, you can just take any or all of the memory boards in a configuration up to 65K, plug it into your S100 machine, and go. However, we still had to have all those provisions that were necessary for expansion to the Megabyte system to work in conjunction with the memory manager board. Right, the specific provisions for expansion are that the memory boards, instead of decoding 16 address lines, now decode 20 address lines, which is capable. That gives you the proper amount of address bits for a megabyte. Right. In addition to that, memory boards in the past that have had write protect use the protect status line as an output to inform the front panel to turn on a light to say you're trying to access protect or to write into protected memory. Well, on these boards, it is a selectable feature that protect status is an input as opposed to an output. And the IMM then drives the protect status line when it detects that an attempt is being made to write into protected memory. Okay. Now, up till just a very few months ago, memory boards designed for the S100 bus have been almost exclusively static. Now, there's really two reasons for this. One reason being that some of the very first products for the S100 bus, there was in fact a dynamic memory board, or there was a couple of dynamic memory boards that didn't fare very well, and somehow the marketplace has gotten the impression that dynamic memories are a bad thing. The other thing is there were some very good, inexpensive static chips available, which made memory designs almost trivial to turn out a 4K static board. Right. The difficulty is now that we're talking about larger memories, the choice in devices for getting 65K onto a 5x10 card becomes extremely limited. In fact, it's limited to the point that the only thing that is available is dynamic devices. And in addition to that, if you're now talking about greater memory size than 65K, the power consumption of static devices become very prohibitive. For example, the MSI RAM 65 or 65K dynamic memory board consumes approximately half the power of a typical 4K static board. Right? So this will allow an existing mainframe to expand to a rather large memory without having to do any extensive modifying or beefing up of the power supply. I also think that the marketplace is becoming finding that properly designed dynamic memories are totally acceptable, since they can be designed to be totally static from a user's point of view. Okay. Could I have the next slide, please? Okay. I think we can get it almost on all on there. All right. The rest of my presentation will deal specifically with the IMM, or our memory control card. Now this is really where it's all happening in terms of expanding the system. I'm going to break this into two parts. The first part will address just the hardware that's on the card. What is there available to work with? And since this is a programmable device and that there's a microprocessor which controls this card, the second part will be a very brief summary of the programming which will be implemented on the production version of the card. Right. What I have here is a greatly simplified block diagram of the IMM. Right. The top and the bottom portions actually represent the major part of the electronic design effort, specifically being the memory configuration control electronics. This is the part that takes the 16-bit address that comes out of the system microprocessor and in turn makes memory see a 20-bit address. And the bottom part, which is the read and write protect feature, which is implemented in the system. Okay, the block to the left, or the interrupts, is electronically very simple. Very simple. It's strictly a means of getting the interrupt request lines into the timing control section where the intelligence resides. All right. Okay, next slide, please. Okay. Here we have a block diagram of how the memory address expansion is implemented. Okay. At the very top, we have a 64 by 6-bit high-speed random access memory. By high speed, I mean approximately 35 nanosecond access time. Right. To address the 64 6-bit nibbles requires six address lines. Right. Four of the address lines are coming in here from the bottom, essentially from the timing and control circuitry. But these four address lines, or the higher order addresses going into this RAM, select a four nibble segment, one of 16, out of the high speed RAM. The two additional address lines, or the lower order bits of the RAM, are address A14 and A15 coming from this S100 bus. In a 16-bit address space, these would be, in fact, the two high-order address lines. Okay. So, by the timing control circuitry establishing a 4-bit address here, it will select one of 16 maps, which will map out of the megabyte address space four 16K blocks into the system microprocessor's address space. All right. Now, the reason we have a 6 bits out rather than just the four additional bits that it would be required to expand to a 20-bit address bus is we also have a typo on our graph, on my slide up here, but coming out the right side, that should be AA14 and AA15 for alternate address lines 14 and alternate address lines 15. Right. When the memory boards are used with the IMM, they're jumpered in such a way that they look at these alternate address lines as opposed to the primary address lines for bits 14 and 15. This allows any 16K block in the megabyte to be mapped into any 16K block in the system's address space, the 65K address space. Okay. The multiplexer in the center is a provision such that different maps can be used for both read and write. Right? Normally, the read and write configurations, the configuration being a selection of four 16K blocks that you shove into the system's address place to make it 65K, would normally be the same. We have a provision for splitting it, so we have separate configurations for read and write, which allows for rapid transfers of data from one configuration to another configuration inside the megabyte of memory. Okay, next slide, please. Right. The other major item was the read and write protect logic. Right. Most of you are familiar with write protect, since almost every memory board manufactured for the S100 bus has some form of write protect. Well, protection is implemented in the IMM at two levels. The first level is very similar to what you've seen on previous boards. The megabyte is divided into 1K blocks, or 1,000 1K blocks. Each one can be individually protected or enabled. All right, this 1K block protection only applies to write protect. So under software control, or even from your switches from the front panel, if you got one of those machines, you can, in fact, protect and or enable any block, any 1K block within the entire megabyte. It defaults to being enabled when the system comes up, but after that, once you protect a block, it will remain protected no matter where it's switched to. All right, this is on the megabyte address space, so as you're reconfiguring your system, the protection will in fact follow that particular physical memory block of 1K. The second level of protection applies to the currently selected 65K of memory that's switched into the system CPU's address space, and it consists of a mask. Right? Within the 65K, there will be a range which is enabled, and everything outside of this range is protected. The range is specified by specifying the bottom 4K block which is enabled and the top 4K block which is enabled. Everything within those blocks and in between is enabled, and everything outside of those blocks is protected. If the read protect feature is selected, the second level will provide both read and write protection. Okay, by using a combination of both levels, you can gain very flexible control over areas which are read protected, write protected, and read and write protected. Okay, give the next slide, please. Okay, this represents the timing and control section of the IMM board. It consists primarily of three chips: an Intel 8048 microcontroller, and two expansion chips, specifically the 8355 ROM I/O chip and the 8155 RAM I/O chip. The three chips together, as configured in the system, will give you 3K bytes of ROM, 320 bytes of RAM, 50 I/O lines, and two timers. All right. What you do is you now have this three-chip microcomputer and all these I/O lines coming off of it. Well, you take these I/O lines and shoot them out to all your peripheral circuitry, for example, the memory configuration circuitry and the protection circuitry, and use that to control that circuitry. And in addition, you use some more I/O lines to interface onto the S100 bus. Now, I should have used a separate block on the overall system block diagram for the interface logic, but it's very tightly integrated into the controller logic. The S100 bus to the IMM controller is a series of I/O ports, and the address which is used for these ports will map into certain functions, specifically run, single cycle, single instruction, and interrupt. If it maps into run, it just turns the main system loose and it goes on and does its own thing. If it's single cycle, it does the data transfer, all right, to or from the system bus, the S100 bus, and then stops the system again at the beginning of the next cycle. If it's single instruction, it's similar, except it stops the system again at the next fetch. Interrupt. There's just a provision for driving the interrupt lines for implementing the interrupt control features of the board. Right? The reason you need to be able to single cycle and single instruction the IMM is that in communicating with the system, the IMM runs significantly slower than the system CPU because the 8048 is a 2.5 microsecond cycle time device. And also required for synchronization of the operation of the controller and the system bus. Right. Now, by having these features, you can, in fact, write to the system bus a sequence of bytes under single step, which will look to the CPU just like memory contents and force the CPU to execute any kind of code you wish to, much in the same sense as the typical hardware front panel controller will force the CPU to implement a particular sequence of instructions. By having the single instruction capability, we can pass to the CPU, after we've stopped it on a single instruction function, an instruction such as push H, all right, and then turn it loose, and H will then in turn be pushed onto the system stack. All right, so we're able to force an instruction into there and then subsequently turn it loose to actually execute the instruction. Okay, can I have the next slide, please? Now, that is the hardware that's available. It's capable of extremely general purpose application. However, the more general purpose you make your application, the more of a trade-off you're going to have to look at in terms of system operating speed and any restrictions that you'll necessarily have to place upon programming that'll run under this system. Right. Now, the programming or firmware which is being implemented in the production IMMs, and by the way, it is available in EEPROM version, so if you choose to implement this system and want to optimize the firmware for your own application, it's a totally feasible thing to do. All right. The firmware is in fact general purpose in nature, but strongly biased towards multitasking types of applications. Multitasking specifically being, for example, a multi-user basic or time-sharing systems of various and sundry sorts, data acquisition systems. It could easily be structured as multitasking systems. Right? The firmware or control of the system is based upon a process control word. The IMM in its RAM maintains a table of process control words. Each process control word completely specifies a system configuration. It specifies its configuration number. What's the configuration number? That's the number we sent up to the map, the configuration map, to tell which combination of 16K blocks we want presently switched into the system's 65K address space. It contains an entry point or base to a table of entry points, so that when we transfer control to a certain process or to a certain user, this is the entry point for that process or user. The protect mask, this is just the bounds of the enabled address spaces, which is available to that process or user, and some access and protect flags. These are flags that you would use for designating which processes are in the executive or who has control of the system, and which processes are, for example, a basic user who's just come on the line and should have limited access or limited access to other processes and or limited access to controlling the functions of the IMM itself. Next slide, please. Okay, the way the PCWs are handled, I mentioned we maintain a table of PCWs in the IMM's RAM. Right? As you create new processes, the system software will tell the IMM to create a new PCW with all the required entries. All right, once you have these entries, we now can rapidly reconfigure the system by giving commands to the IMM in terms of PCW numbers. Then the IMM just goes to the PCW table, finds the data there, and then automatically reconfigures the system in accordance with that PCW. All right. The IMM also maintains a PCW stack, because the types of controls we have, we call a process call, process jump, and process return. All right. These are very similar to the corresponding machine level instructions, except now they're commands to the IMM, which appears to be a sequence of output ports to the system MPU for passing these types of commands. And once the IMM receives one of these commands, it then reconfigures memory, and if it's a process call or a process return, also manipulates an onboard PCW stack, so you have the capability of nesting transfers among these different processes. Right. Based upon the access flags in the PCW, any particular process can be prohibited from accessing any other particular processes. This gives you at least some provision of system security in implementing timeshare type applications. Okay, got the next slide, please. Okay, the interrupt control features of the board. The reason there are interrupt control implemented on the IMM, there's two primary reasons. One reason is the electronics is inherently there just by programming the controller chip to implement interrupts control. All we had to do was provide a data path for the interrupt request lines onto the board. All right? That's one reason. The other reason is when you're working with any form of block switching, and this mapped reconfiguration of memory really boils down to being a variation of block switching. When you have an interrupt, also have an interrupt-driven system, you have the problem of ensuring that your interrupt service routines are switched into the address space at the time that the interrupt happens. All right. Not only do they have to be switched in, if you're also implementing these other features, you got to make sure that that block of memory is enabled. All right. So, implementing interrupts in the IMM is done almost entirely in the firmware. All right. As a result, it's a little slow, but it's intended for applications where the level of sophistication is more important than the speed. All right. Each interrupt vector, there's the standard eight interrupt request lines that are on the S100 bus. Each interrupt input has its own PCW. All right. So when you take one of these interrupt request lines low, if interrupts are enabled and it's not masked on the IMM, it'll issue the interrupt to the system, reconfiguring the system. All right. And in addition to that, if you have the feature selected, it'll do an automatic CPU state save. All right. So in that sense, the interrupt looks just like a process call, just like a regular interrupt looks like a subroutine call. Right. Returns from interrupts would look like a process return, with the exception that if you have automatic state save selected on the call, you would also have automatic CPU state restore on the return. Right. The interrupts can be maskable on the IMM, and in addition to that, they can be non-maskable when used with an 8080. Right. At the CPU, right? This, by non-maskable, all we do is use the next instruction feature of the interface. We just stop the CPU on the next instruction fetch and then force instructions to it to implement the process call. Okay. The two clocks that are available in the controller section of the IMM are the one in the, we've got an 8-bit clock and a 14-bit clock available in the 8048 and the 8155. All right, in any custom firmware, of course, you can use these clocks for anything you want. Right, in the production firmware, the 8048's clock, which is an 8-bit clock, will be used for implementing a time of day clock. All right, of course, you can enter the time of day into it, then it'll run, and then you can access the time of day back into your system for whatever you choose to use that for. The 14-bit clock in the 8155 is used as a real-time clock for generated equally spaced interrupts on time, or alternately, it can be used as a rate generator for serial I.O. Right? There is provision for bringing the output of that clock off the board and using it with a serial I.O. card as a software-controllable baud rate generator. Right? That was a quick and dirty summary of the hardware and the software which will be implemented on the IMM. If I have the lights, I'd be glad to attempt any questions you have. Yes? 400 nanosecond access time. We have not announced any faster boards. All right. I honestly am not in a position to be able to answer that kind of a question, right?
How about anything else? The price of your memory board is a little high. It's a 64K board. The
Okay, that's another thing. It's completely, I'm an engineer. I'm not involved with making those kinds of decisions. I'd recommend you talk to our marketing people, and I know they'll be more than glad to answer your questions for you relative to pricing. You should be able to find them at the booth. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.